Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
We're joined by a true legend of Irish sport, a woman who has changed horse racing forever. She made history as the first female jockey to win the Grand National in 2021 on Manila Times, followed by the Cheltenham Gold Cup in 2022 on Plutard, or a plus third, as someone I remember a commentator calling it. She's been leading rider at Cheltenham, won every major championship race, and now after an incredible 575 career wins, she's retired from racing. Rachel Blackmore, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for making the journey in as well. Now that you're, like, people think you've retired, you're like, you're gardening or golfing.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. You don't really retire when you're 36. You know, it's a pivot into something else, really. Yeah, there's no, retired is a bit of a strange word, I think.
But your day and your as a jockey was busy anyway, but it wasn't always you weren't always at race meetings. I mean, you had other things to do. You're probably still doing a lot of those things that you still did.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm really busy, you know. Like, people are asking me, you know, what are you doing with yourself now? And like, I'm just doing a multitude of different things, and you'd be surprised how much I wasn't able to do when I was racing. You know, racing is all consuming, and it's obviously was number one thing in my life for a very, very long time, and now you can just accept other things and do other things, and you know, it's nice to have that bit of flexibility and freedom again as well, I suppose.
It didn't take you long to fill your day, in other words.
Yeah, no, not at all. You know, a couple of people asked me, you know, are you still riding out? Which would have been massive. 6 days a week I would have rode out when I was a jockey, so he's still riding out, and like, I'm not, but I actually don't have time, you know. There hasn't been a morning yet when I've been, oh, sure, I might go right out, you know. So
when you were riding out, what time did your alarm clock go off?
It wasn't too dramatic. You'd be up a lot earlier when you're coming in here, I think, during radio. I'd be up at 10 to 7 maybe. Our lives were riding out 6 days a week. And then when there's racing, then you're heading off to the races. But I suppose as well, it's the mentality of it. You know, your racing is constantly kind of on your brain. And, you know, it's something you're always thinking about. But it's something I love doing. So I was so lucky that I got to have that as my job, I suppose.
When I talk to professional sports people and retirement, and that word retirement, they talk about the next day, that sudden change as they clear their calendar, essentially. You would have been busy. You would have been meeting a helicopter here, a helicopter there, a truck here, that there.
Never got a helicopter, but
you never. Yeah. What you mean? You were never taken from race course in a helicopter.
No, not quite. Maybe a little tiny small plane, but never, never the helicopter. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that, Rachel.
On a very rare occasion now, I think planes and helicopters are more for flat jockeys. Jump jockeys don't go into that world too often. But it was very different. The morning I woke up and I was finished, I did have all the race meetings in my calendar on my laptop, and they all just got deleted. And it's just so different. You know, you get something in the post, invite to something, and you don't have to check the racing calendar anymore. So it is your life, you know. But I think, as you say, that's sport. And when you're in a sport, it is the most important thing that you have every day.
So that day that you cleared the calendar, what was that like?
Yeah, it was strange. I was very lucky being a jockey that I got to decide when that day was. You know, that's a privileged position to be in. Like, our sport is so dangerous, and you know, lots of jockeys don't get that luxury. So for me to be able to decide when that was the day was that was what every jockey would like to choose.
Yeah, it is a hard life. I mean, we've seen friends of yours who've lost their lives in the sport as well, and serious injuries. You've had your own share of injuries as well. You were quite recently out for 3 months.
Yeah, I have. I've broken plenty of bones, but they've all healed. You know, I've broken hip, ankle, neck, you know, but they all heal, and that's the main thing. And that's just part of being a jockey also. You know, it's not something that we ever think about too much. I think if you did think about it, you probably wouldn't be in the right job.
Can we go back a little bit as well? I've met your mum and dad, two of the nicest people in the world. We were at in Leopardstown, And a friend, a mutual friend of ours, Pat Keogh, introduced us, and they were just the nice people. But your mother wouldn't look at the race. She was almost looking away. Now, she did get into it, and I could see her shouting them all. She was afraid. You grew up on a dairy farm.
Yeah, I did. I grew up on a farm in Tipperary. I had a great childhood. Like, I love being outside and with animals. And, you know, I had a pony and, yeah, I had a fantastic childhood. And, yeah, my parents obviously got a great kick out of my success. And, you know, as did my local community of Killinall. And, yeah, it's just... You know, it's so nice when the success that I had has that knock on effect. And yeah, my mum is definitely happy. I suppose she doesn't have to watch me anymore. That's that was one massive perk for her with my retirement.
But they're great supporters of you. And obviously they bought you the first pony. What was the first pony like?
Yeah, so the first kind of main pony I had was called Bubbles, and she was very forward going. So she used to go too fast a lot of the time. But I think that actually gave me a bit of a feeling for what that was like, and I kind of enjoyed it. So yeah, I think riding Bubbles made me realise I might like to be a jockey someday.
So you were riding point to point, which is the steeplechase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I rode as an amateur, and I was in college at the same time. So I was doing that till I was 25. And then when I was 25, I turned from amateur to conditional, which is like a professional license. And yeah, things kind of started to pick up for me then. So, but I was just so lucky with, you know, the connections I made, and, you know, getting into Henry de Bromhead's yard was a massive thing for me. That kind of brought my career to a whole new level and expose me to the horses you need to be on to get to the places like Cheltenham and have the success I did. So, you know, you can be a very good rider, but you also need to get on the horses. So I was very lucky that that happened to me.
I think that goes back to, you need people to believe in you though as well. You need, like in anything in life, I think you need people to give you a chance, whether it be to get the job working in a shop, to get something else, to get to work on the radio, to get to work. Somebody has to go, yeah, I think they're good and I'm going to back you. And you've been lucky with people. There are people who have backed you.
Oh, massively,
you.
Yeah. Like, even, you know, to change from amateur to conditional was Shark Hanlon. He was a big backer of me back then to get
Shark.
Me going. Shark, yeah. The John Hanlon, officially. but nobody in racing knows him as John anyway. And then there was lots of people. I had a brilliant agent in Gary Cribben, and he linked me up with lots of different smaller trainers who gave me fantastic opportunities to ride more and get more practice, and that helped me improve. And, you know, that put me in a position then when, you know, when I did get opportunities on Henry's horses, you know, I was able to make the most of them.
And he's a gentleman, Henry, as well, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he's a fantastic trainer as well. He's so good at what he does, and, you know, especially when March rolls around for Cheltenham, he seems to peak his horses extremely well.
You ride out in the morning. If you're not a race day, you ride out in the morning, and then you're
in my old life, yeah,
in your old life as well. And then what is it? I heard you mention the gym before. You went to the gym as well.
Yeah. You do a bit of gym work in the evenings if you're not racing. And, you know, it's at every different jockey does a different thing. You know, a lot of jockeys will run the track when they get there as part of their fitness. And, you know, everyone does something different, I suppose. But yeah, I used to do a bit of gym just to try and keep myself as strong and as fit as I could.
Can I bring you back to one of those days? You've got a pair of headphones there. Pop them on.
Ooh, of course.
Yeah, this is somebody with a complaint. With a complaint. No, I'm joking. Let's see if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah. Okay. Have a listen to this.
Manila Times. Rachel Blackwell still five lengths clear, and it is Manila Times who is keeping up the gallop towards the line. Manila Times. Rachel Blackwell raises the bar still higher. She won the National at Manila Times for Henry de Bromhead, the duo of the season.
Yeah, it's like hearing it so clearly in my ears. It's like there's no escaping it. It's it never gets old hearing that. I can tell you.
You started that race, and, you know, obviously prices and people are odds, and that's one part of horse racing, of the horse being involved with horses as well. But what was it like as you legged up, as you're sitting inside, you're in the parade ring, and off you go?
Do you know what? It was such an enjoyable race to ride in. Manila Times is such a fantastic horse to ride. He was a brilliant jumper, which as a jockey, like, is a fantastic feeling. You know, I sometimes try and describe it. Like, I don't know, have you ever been skiing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're skiing and you're on like a slope that's, you know, comfortable for you, and you're in, the snow is lovely and you're in a really good rhythm going down. Like, that's kind of what it feels like when you're riding in a race on a horse like him. He's just jumping from fence to fence. I just got a lovely passage through the race. There was, you know, the ball bounce for me in different areas. You need that bit of luck. You need a lot of luck in a race like the National. But, you know, I kind of had it all that day, and it was just, it's a different feeling winning that to winning anything else, because you don't have much pressure going into a race like that, because there's so many different variables and so much can happen that you don't feel that pressure that you would maybe a couple of weeks beforehand in Cheltenham. So, yeah, it's just sheer elation. Like when I crossed the line, it was unbelievable.
The amount in Cheltenham.
And it's Apluton who got away much quicker. And Apluton is storming up the hill. 6-7 lengths clear in the hands of Rachel Blackmore. She won the champion hurdle on Tuesday, the Grand National last year. And now it's the Gold Cup. Apluton, a runaway winner.
I still find it kind of hard to believe all of this sometimes. it's incredible when you hear it back. You know, I just got to ride such unbelievably good horses, and yeah, I was just so lucky in my career.
Oh, you put it down to luck. You make your own luck with hard work. Did you ever watch those races again? Are you at events where they're shown? Do you see them?
Yeah, you'd often see little clips, and I suppose especially after I retired, there was plenty of clips going around social media and stuff. And it's different now. I can really let it all sink in and kind of believe it all, and you know. When you're in racing, you're constantly just looking forward. You know, you're not really dwelling on what's after happening, and it's on to next year. And, you know, it's always looking to the next day of racing. And now that's part of my life is over, no one can take what I've done away now, and it's set in stone, and I can really enjoy it. And yeah, I still do watch it with an element of disbelief, to be honest.
There's lots of texts coming in for you, but people are asking what are you up to now? Obviously, you said you're busy, and you know, you wonder how you ever had time to go racing.
Yeah.
What's happening now?
Yeah, I'm doing lots of different things. Like I'm very lucky. I had some great sponsors and supporters when I was racing, and plenty of them are still with me here. You know, Volvo being a big one. I drive a beautiful XC60, and you know, I'm still driving that, and you know, it's a beautiful Jeep to drive, and like I'm very lucky that I get associated with brands like that, and you know, it's they're great partnerships to have.
One of the things I'm involved in Gymnastics Ireland, and one of the pieces of research that's been done across sporting is keeping teenage girls in sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of our younger people look to you as being someone who's made it as well. Do you get many letters nobody says letters anymore, emails, Instagrams, contacts, people
no,
come
do,
up and,
I do
and
get
speak
letters.
To you and you get letters too.
I know when it's like write to your sporting hero in school week on the curriculum, you know, you get some letters then. I actually got one the other day from a girl who said, you know, we were asked to write to our favourite author. And I was like, what? Oh my God, that's something.
But like, you are an author.
That's
yeah.
a letter I never thought I was ever going to get in my life. So, that was a very cool one to get.
Yeah, and there's a lot of young males, females and different people involved in horse racing. It's keeping them there, isn't it? That's the hard thing.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. And, you know, getting people to go racing is a big thing. I'm involved as well now with the Jockey Club as their head of Ladies' Day for the Cheltenham Festival. So, you know, they're being very proactive and trying to get more women to go to the Cheltenham Festival. You know, it is quite male-dominated. There's only a quarter of the ticket sales are women. So, you know, they're putting in a lot of work to try and... get more women racing. So I'm kind of helping out with that now as well. And I'm doing plenty of different things. And, you know, I'm working with KPMG, FBD Hotels. You know, there's a lot going on there. And I'm very grateful that mainly that the career I had still has the knock-on effect that I'm still busy doing things. You know, I'm very, very lucky that that's the case.
And the women in my life would say, if you want to improve any venue, better toilets. More toilets.
Yeah, oh my God, my friend said that to me as well. She was like, good toilets, make sure that... I was kind of saying, like, you know, they need to get a cocktail bar and they need to get in there. Like, yeah, they need to make sure there's lots of toilets and they're nice toilets. That's such a...
Toilets and a shelf, yeah. A shelf inside the cubicle to put something on, a bag,
yeah.
And over this... it's three women in my house, so I've listened to this
all
the
all
time.
About
yeah.
It, yeah.
And why is there no queue at the men's and why is there a queue at the women's? Well, yeah. And
yeah.
If we go into the men's, there'll be murder. Well, this is right, you know.
I will bring forward your recommendation strongly.
from the Byrne household, and also make sure that it's safe to walk with high heels if we're going on a glamour day out.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they're doing a lot of work, but it's lovely for me to be back involved in the industry and, you know, doing things like that. So yeah, I'm very lucky.
There's more coming in about you as well, asking this and that, but look, that's all too personal as well. What about riding now? Do you get a chance to go out? You probably have. Do you have horses yourself?
Yeah, look, we have a farm at home, and you know, I'm involved with one or two broodmares now and things like that. And yeah, like riding will be a part of my future again. But I suppose for me now to go into, you know, if I went down to Henry de Bromhead's now to ride out, it would feel. It would just be strange. Like I still miss racing. I miss riding. It probably wouldn't have the purpose it used to have. So that would be just unusual for me to do. And yeah, I know I'm a couple of months in now, but I am still kind of getting my head around it all. And
this has been your focus for so long.
Yeah,
and
exactly,
it's only May
yeah.
that you announced that you were going to retire. And when you actually retired, I mean, you must have seen friends that you hadn't seen for a long time, seen people who've had babies that you haven't seen for a long time. Did you do all that?
Yeah, I did. Like I went for lunches with friends and like I didn't have to rush off. And, you know, I'm able to accept wedding invites now and things like that. And yeah, look, it's different, but it's I was so lucky in the career I had. And I'm kind of finding my way into my next part of my life now.
And Christmas is a big time for racing.
I know,
well.
Christmas
so what are you
is going to
do?
So hard. I know. Like,
how are you
going to
pick where you're going to go?
It's going to be very strange. Like, literally, Christmas Day is usually just, I'm lucky I could always eat the dinner and stuff, which was great. But your mind is just thinking of Stephen's Day, the rides you have, the rides coming up. Like, there's four really important days of racing, Leopardstown, Limerick, Down Royal as well. So it's a really busy time of year for jockeys, but this year, like, I don't know, what am I going to think about on Christmas Day? It's just, I don't know, yeah. I'm probably going to struggle over Christmas.
You're going to have to pick what you're going to wear. You're going to have to pick which race meeting you're going to go to.
I feel like I might struggle. I don't think I'll be going racing.
Really?
No, I don't think I will. Unless I have a job there, but my old job is gone, so...
I would imagine there are hundreds of companies and people who'd love to have you there and to do something as well. Because
you know
the sport so well. You know everybody in the sport. Any insight that people want into the sport, you can give it to them. And just a small anecdote, I was in French's in Wexford and we were watching Cheltenham and there were people there betting on every race that you were in.
Oh God,
regardless
how much did they lose?
A lot. But regardless, they were just, you know, they felt good when they were backing you.
Yeah, I know.
They really did.
Yeah,
you brought that to people as well. You brought a lot of joy to people.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you'll continue to do that in whatever role you find yourself in.
Thanks so much.
And enjoy a massive Christmas dinner on Stephen's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Stephen's Day. You can eat the box of biscuits, the mallows. You don't have to make the weights. You don't have to worry about the weights. Look, will you give your regards to your mum and dad as well?
I will.
As I say, they're lovely people and it was lovely to meet them. And
she'll be devastated I didn't tell her to listen in now and she got such a mention.
Give their names as well. Go on. You have to give them the shout out on the radio.
No, I won't.
You won't?
My parents will do them fine.
Rachel, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
As I say, you're an ambassador for Ladies' Day at Cheltenham. You're involved with Volvo and their safety campaign as well, which is really, really important part of your work. And look, thanks for taking the time. I know you had to travel in this morning as well through the traffic to get in here. And it's brilliant. It's lovely, lovely, lovely to see you.
Thank you.
Rachel Blackmore, thank you very much. We're going to take a little break, but after the break, we're going to Sean O'Casey's The Plough and the Stars is being published as a standalone edition in Spain. And behind the project is Ibernia, a bilingual Irish-Spanish publishing house run by Enda Keneally. And we'll be talking to Enda Keneally after this little break.
Email oliver@rte.ie.